This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
From Mission Hills, California, I'm Doug Stolhan. Thank you for joining me for another edition of the Puck Podcast presented by H2O Overdrive. Coming up, I've got three periods of news to get you caught up on everything that's happened in the last week in the NHL. First period, I'll tell you about another coaching casualty and a shocking contract extension, plus several big trades as we get close to the NHL trade deadline coming up on April 3rd at 3 Eastern, 12 Pacific. In the second period, I'll have an interview with Curtis Zupke, who is a writer for NHL.com, covering the Western Conference. We'll talk about all the things going on in the Western Conference, including some potential trades. And in the third period, I'll check in with our fan correspondents, read your emails, and a whole lot more in this edition of the Puck Podcast. Obviously, since I'm doing the open, Eddie Garcia is once again unable to join me. He will hopefully be back next week. So for you fans of Eddie, look forward to that. If you're a fan of me, you're in for a treat, because it's once again a Doug Stolhan monologue here on the Puck Podcast. But shame on me for referring to myself in the third person. Anyway, let's move on and drop the puck, as it were, on the first period. And we start with our big story of the week. And for the last few weeks, it's been maybe one big story, if that. This week, we had a lot, and we had our choice. But I went with let's start in Tampa, Florida, where the Tampa Bay Lightning this week fired head coach Guy Boucher on Sunday and hired their AHL coach John Cooper. And it took a couple days. They waited 2 days to hire John Cooper, who was the AHL, or the head coach of their AHL affiliate, the Syracuse Crunch. Of course, he was the head coach of the Norfolk Admirals last year when that was the AHL affiliate for Tampa, and they went on that insane winning streak to win the Calder Cup down in the AHL. So obviously this guy is very familiar with the Lightning's personnel and their front office and vice versa. But it did take him a couple days to name him as the head coach. Now, Guy Boucher, his dismissal came 1 day after the Lightning fell behind by 4 goals in the first period and lost in Ottawa 5-3 at the time. Tampa Bay was next to last in the Eastern Conference with a 13-17-1 record on the season. Boucher was in just his third year as the Lightning head coach and was hired in 2010. In that very first season, with Steve Yzerman as his GM, Tampa Bay made it to within 1 win of the Stanley Cup final, losing in the Eastern Conference final that season. And then in the second year, they missed the playoffs entirely. This year, obviously, towards the bottom of the Eastern Conference and not doing well at all. Now, John Cooper is 45 years old. He was in his third season coaching the Lightning's AHL team, who, I mentioned last year, they won the Calder Cup. This year, they're first place in the Eastern Conference in the AHL, so he's had nothing but success in the AHL. He was the AHL's Coach of the Year last season, of course. Also won a championship in the United States Hockey League in 2010. The man who fired Boucher and hired Cooper is, of course, Tampa Bay Lightning GM Steve Yzerman. He said about Guy Boucher, quote, "Guy has poured his heart and soul into the Lightning organization for these past 3 years, and we appreciate all the work he has done. But ultimately, I am not satisfied with the direction we are heading, and I believe making a change today is in the best interest of our franchise," end quote. Boucher's hiring was Yzerman's first major move as the GM, and it looked great that first year when they went to the Eastern Conference Final. Things have soured since, and the rumors were, the talk after he got fired was that the veterans on the Lightning had tired of Guy Boucher's message, tired of his coaching styles, and they were no longer responding to him as a head coach, which, if that's true, it would absolutely drive me crazy as a GM, because I'm paying you literally millions of dollars to play hockey. I'm going to pick the head coach based on the style that I want to play and the kind of coach I want behind the bench. Your job is not to decide whether or not you want to play hard for him. Your job is to play hard for whoever the head coach is. And the fans deserve it. The organization deserves it. Your teammates deserve it. And it's just unacceptable for a player to just decide, yeah, this guy's not motivating me anymore. And I always chafe at the notion that an NHL player, especially a veteran, let's just take Vincent Lecavalier, Martin St. Louis, for example. I don't know that it was them particularly, but let's take them as an example. I find it hard to believe that those two guys need a coach that motivates them, that gets them fired up and ready to play, and they need to be able to have a message that they can respond to, that they're not just professional enough to go out there on a nightly basis and play to their potential. These guys are some of the best players in the world. I find it very hard to believe that they need a coach that can give them a really good pregame speech and get them fired up, or else they're not going to play well that night. And if they completely quit on the guy, then you just got to fire him. You got no choice but to get rid of him, because there's nothing that can ever be done. This guy 2 years ago was pushing all the right buttons, and now suddenly he's no good. It's the same coach. Now, maybe the NHL as a whole, I think what's more likely, in my opinion, is that the NHL as a whole figured out Guy Boucher's system. That first year, they didn't know it very well. He brought in a new system, a 1-3-1 kind of system. It was a very passive forechecking system, but it pounced when you made a turnover, which it worked to create. Once you made one, they pounced. They turned the puck the other way. They had speed. They had skill. Their power play was very good. Teams figured that out and have adjusted on how to play the Tampa Bay Lightning in the last 2 years. And the Lightning have not responded in kind by mixing up their playing style enough to keep things fresh, to keep teams off balance against them. I think they were a very predictable team to play against, and I think the coaching staff of the other teams figured them out, especially in a short season like this where you're only playing the Eastern Conference. If those teams know how to play you, know what to expect, you're going to have a tough time, because they're all going to be prepared, and if you just play as they expect, then it's going to be tough for you to win games. And I think that's what happened. Now, why they don't say that, I don't know. Why? And certainly the Lightning have not said anything. They haven't come out and said, you know, he lost the locker room. They haven't said he couldn't outcoach the other teams anymore. They haven't said any of that. They said, we thank him very much for his hard work, wish him the best, but we got to make a move. Good day. And let's bring in a new version of Guy Boucher, and that is John Cooper, who, like Boucher, comes from the AHL, has no previous NHL coaching experience. Yzerman said at the press conference that introduced Cooper as the team's head coach, quote, he has had success at every level he has coached and is extremely familiar with our organization, as well as our players. He has a tremendous record at all levels, and we feel he is ready to make the move to the NHL, end quote. Now, couldn't you have said, I think if you look back, you'd probably find very similar quotes about Guy Boucher when he was hired just 3 years ago, less than 3 years ago, and yet here we are with him as now the former head coach of the Tampa Bay Lightning. As for Cooper, he said, quote, there is no other team in hockey that I would rather be coaching than the Tampa Bay Lightning. Apparently he hadn't checked the standings recently. It's quite a tribute to Steve Yzerman, Jeff Vinnick, and the organization they are building that they are proud to promote from within. I look forward to getting to know the players and getting to work right away, end quote. I would think he knows a lot of the players. Anybody that's come up through the system in the last 3 years, he should know pretty well. Or even gone down to the AHL, you'd think he'd be very familiar with the Lightning's personnel and playing style and all that. So I think it's going to be a quick adjustment. It was interesting that he was hired on Tuesday, and I believe it was on Wednesday that they played a game and he did not coach. He was up in the stands watching. Well, not in the stands. He didn't buy a ticket, but he was not behind the bench. He was up in probably the press box, I'm sure, watching the game and observing from there. He made his debut behind the bench tonight, Friday, as I record the show. Just a few hours ago, he made his debut behind the Lightning bench and won a 5-4 shootout victory over the New Jersey Devils. So far, so good for John Cooper. Now, this season, this move is not about saving this season, as they are not going to make the playoffs unless something dramatic happens. They are, with that win, gets them back to being 4 points out of the playoffs, but they also have four teams they would need to pass to get into the playoffs. And so while it is mathematically conceivable and doesn't seem like that bad, you know, 4 points, just a couple wins here and there, That's true, but very unlikely with just 14 games to play. To pass four teams in the standings is going to be a challenge. So I think this move was about trying a last-ditch effort to try and salvage this season, though I think it would be a stunning if they made the playoffs. But I think this move was about getting him a preview of the team and getting them familiar with each other so that going into the offseason, going into next season, they've got a jump start. He's not starting fresh in training camp. So John Cooper in, Guy Boucher out, and the nastiest looking head coach in the NHL is no longer employed. It's a sad day for me because as a James Bond fan, watching Guy Boucher behind the bench always reminded me of the villain from Casino Royale. And no, I'm not talking about Woody Allen. I'm talking about the latest Casino Royale with Daniel Craig as James Bond. He just reminded me with the facial scar of that guy. I don't know that Guy Boucher cried blood. I'd have to have seen him when he got sacked, as Ed would say. And that was the text from Ed. Guy Boucher has been sacked. So I'd have to have seen him then to see if he cried blood when Steve Yzerman gave him the news, but I doubt it. I think he cries normal tears. If he cried at all, he may have just said, "All right, it's your problem now, buddy." In French, of course. But so Guy Boucher is out, and the Montreal Canadiens that were kicking themselves for not hiring him back in the day, well, you've got another chance. He's available if you want to fire Michel Therrien, even though you're leading your division and having the best season you've had in a long time. So that's doubtful. But there you go. That was our top story of the week. But it was far from the only big story, and let's get to the other big stories. And you can't, I mean, you know what's coming. Unless you've been in a cave, you know where we're going with this. And we're going to Pittsburgh to talk about the job that GM Ray Shiro is doing well in advance of the NHL trading deadline. He is setting himself up. The Penguins were already clearly the best team in the Eastern Conference. They had won, 11 games in a row when they started making these trades. And but let's get to the trades they made, and that was the first one. Was when they acquired Dallas Stars captain Brendan Morrow and a third-round pick in the 2013 draft in exchange for prospect Joseph Morrow, no relation, and a 2013 fifth-round pick. Now, Brendan Morrow has just 6 goals and 11 points in 29 games this season. He was, though, the captain of the Dallas Stars, and so it was a very shocking trade to see them make since they were in the hunt for playoffs. I think they were maybe even 8th in the playoffs at the time, maybe 9th when they made this move. So it was very confusing to see them trade their captain in the middle of a playoff race. He's been with the Stars since he was drafted by them with the 25th overall pick back in 1997. He's been the captain of Dallas since 2006. He scored at least 20 goals 7 different times in his 12 previous seasons. He has 243 goals and 528 points in his career. He also has 42 points in 78 Stanley Cup playoff games, so he's got plenty of Stanley Cup playoff experience. Not that they need it in Pittsburgh, but he has it. He had 6 points in 21 games to help the Stars reach the 2000 Stanley Cup final as a rookie. He's in the final year of his 6-year, $24.6 million contract and will be an unrestricted free agent at the end of the season. Now, Joseph Morrow, the one that's going to Dallas, and I wonder if he'll keep the numbers so that the fans don't even have to change their jerseys. Joseph Morrow was selected by the Penguins with the 23rd pick of the 2011 draft. In his first pro season, he has 15 points in 57 games with the Penguins' AHL affiliate, the Wilkes-Barre Scranton Penguins. He's reportedly an offensively gifted puck-moving defenseman who had 64 points in 62 games last season with the Portland Winterhawks of the Western Hockey League. So, Pittsburgh already having a great season and leading the Eastern Conference. They go out, they give up nobody off their active roster. Morrow was, according to one thing I saw, their 5th-rated prospect. So, a good prospect, to be certain, but nothing that's like a can't-miss, how-can-you-give-this-guy-up kind of guy. So, they give up a prospect, they get a third-round pick, and Very confusing, though. Dallas, I'm not sure what they were thinking. I'll get into them in a second. But for Pittsburgh, I loved the move, even though Brendan Morrow, I'm familiar with him, obviously, as a Pacific Division fan. But he's not what he was, but they're not expecting him to be what he was. They're looking at this, I'm sure, as a third-line guy. And for that role on a team that's deep and offensively gifted, if he can just go in there and chip in the occasional point here and there and really just play a gritty, sound game that is consistent. The head coach Dan Bylsma knows what he's going to get for him every time he sends him over the boards, and give him some grit, give him some leadership, which they already have plenty of, but give him just another guy that's been a captain in the NHL for many years and is hungry to win that first Stanley Cup. If they can get that, I got to think this is a great trade for him, because it's what's the risk at this point? You know, you gave up Joe Morrow to get Brendan Morrow. Now, on the flip side of this, what are the Dallas Stars thinking? I understand he's not having a great season, and I guess they've talked to him in contract negotiations. I'm obviously not privy to those, but I guess they've talked to him in contract negotiations, found out we can't re-sign this guy, or we don't want to re-sign this guy. So we're going to let him go in the offseason, or maybe we're going to re-sign him, but whatever the case, we're not going to sign him right now, and we can get a defensive prospect for him and turn a third-round pick into a fifth-round pick. That sounds like a great idea. Confusing trade for Dallas in the middle of a playoff race. Couldn't this have been done in the offseason? Couldn't you have moved Brendan Morrow for and traded down two rounds in the draft for a defensive prospect? It seems like you could have, but perhaps not. You know, maybe this was the best offer that Joe Nieuwendyk got. I can't imagine it was a problem in the locker room that they needed to get rid of him, because he was their captain, and it's just a very confusing trade for a team that is in the playoff race. You don't get a roster player back. You just take your captain off the ice. You take one of your veterans and a normal skating forward off the ice and don't replace him with anybody. Very confusing move by the Dallas Stars and Joe Nieuwendyk. The timing of it just seemed very odd. Almost seemed like they were giving up on the season, but we'll have more on that with Curtis Zupke in the second period. So stay tuned for that. Now, a day after that, while the NHL was still reacting to the fact that the Penguins just got the Stars captain for very little return, they went out and added another Pacific Division player by getting defenseman Douglas Murray from the San Jose Sharks in exchange for their second-round draft picks in 2013 and a conditional second-round pick or third-round pick in 2014. Murray is 33 years old, has 3 assists with a -8 rating in 29 games with the Sharks this season. He's an absolute tree trunk of a human being, 6'3", 240 pounds. He's ranked first on the Sharks in blocked shots and third on the team in hits. He is a punishing stay-home defenseman. He's not a guy that makes the highlights a lot. So if you don't watch a lot of Sharks games and you only watch NHL Tonight for the highlights, or you see a game here and there and you see highlights, you may not be too familiar with him, but as a Pacific Division fan, I know I'm a big fan of Douglas Murray, because, as I said, I describe him as a tree trunk. He's a very solid human being. I mean, got just a thick neck. He plays with a lot of brute force. He delivers a hit with a lot of momentum, and it you feel a hit even when you're watching on TV. When he lines somebody up and hits them, you feel it, and he's a perfect fit, I think, for the Pittsburgh Penguins on their third pairing, maybe second pairing at best, but just a guy that clears the front of the net, puts the fear into forwards to look over their shoulder as he might be coming in with a big hit at any point. It's just a good move, and again, they only gave up draft picks, so it was clear at this point, when you go in 2 days, you trade for Brendan Morrow and Douglas Murray, and you give up three draft picks total and one prospect. One, that's two great trades by GM Ray Shiro. And two, it's clear you're going for it this season. You're loading up for this year. He is, let's continue to talk about the stats. Douglas Murray's been on the Sharks his entire career since he was drafted in the eighth round back in 1999. There aren't even eight rounds in the draft anymore. In his career with San Jose, he has 6 goals, 53 assists, and is a plus 32 in 451 games. This is the final year of his four-year, $10 million deal he signed back in 2009. So again, the Penguins get two players that are veterans, that are consistent players, that are going to be free agents at the end of this season. They have no long-term commitment to these guys. They can be gone at the end of the season if it doesn't work. But both give them a better chance. They make them deeper. They give them a little bit more veteran experience in the playoffs and give some, just make the team better without having to give up anything off the active roster. I think these are great trades by Ray Shiro. And this wasn't even the biggest trade of the week by Ray Shiro by far. Those two trades were simply the appetizers to the main course. And that was on Wednesday when the Pittsburgh Penguins, they made a splash like Louis Anderson doing a belly flop on the hit show Splash. I can't believe Louis Anderson is on that show, but if you have ABC or live in the States, you might know what I'm talking about. He's on a diving show. I love Louis Anderson. He's one of my favorite comedians of all time. Just love his demeanor, but he is, I can't believe he's on that show. But anyway, that's how big this splash was, because let's go through the timeline here. Wednesday, the rumors started coming out that Jerome Iginla had been scratched from the Calgary Flames game against Colorado. Then we got news from Boston that they had scratched a couple of their prospects from a AHL game that night. And everybody thought Boston is the front runner for Iginla. 1 + 1 = 2. A trade must be forthcoming. And the entire media was reporting this as a done deal. If you watched the NBC Sportsnet television game that night on Wednesday night, I think it was the Habs-Bruins game, which was a fantastic game, by the way. So I hope you watched it. But in both the first intermission and the second intermission, they spent extended time talking about how great of a fit Jerome Iginla was going to be with the Boston Bruins. Not if he was traded. They were reporting it as a done deal and what a great fit he was going to be. Because I am on the West Coast, and Eddie actually texted me, you know, they traded him to Boston. We couldn't believe it. We were talking about it. And then I go to log on and put that on the Facebook page, facebook.com/puckpodcast. And I see the headline, the Penguins have traded for Jerome Iginla. And I thought, what? So sure enough, on Wednesday, the Penguins traded forward prospects Ben Hankowski, Kenneth Agostino, and their first-round pick in 2013 to the Flames in exchange for Jerome, Arthur, Lee, Adekunle, Tig, Jr., Elvis, Iginla, better known as Jerome Iginla. That is, in fact, his entire full name. Jerome Iginla, though, and again, the way this trade went down, apparently, it was just crazy. I read that article, that headline, and I thought, they got this wrong. He went to the Bruins. And then I read it a little bit more and refreshed and looked around on the internet, and sure enough, he had been traded to the Penguins right out from under the Bruins' noses. And what a trade that Ray Shiro has pulled off. And apparently, from what we've learned from, you know, it's a big deal, a big trade and a huge deal in the NHL when you have to have a press conference and you weren't involved in the trade. And that was the case for GM Peter Chiarelli of the Boston Bruins. He came out the next day and had to explain what happened, why Jerome Iginla was not on the Boston Bruins. And from his retelling of the story, they had made an offer, a firm offer, with two prospects earlier in the week. On Wednesday at around noon in Boston, they get a call from Flames GM Jay Feaster that says, you got him. We're going to take that deal as is, as you offered it, and done deal. His phrasing was, you won the sweepstakes, so to speak. So Ray Shiro and the Bruins are under the impression that we've got a completed trade. We've made a trade. And we're going to go ahead and scratch these players because they're no longer ours. They're on their way to Calgary. and Jerome McGinley will be here within the next day or two. Then, according to Peter Chiarelli, things went silent from the flames. And as he said, when that happens, that usually means something's going screwy. And sure enough, something was going screwy, because the Calgary Flames then went to Jerome McGinley and told him, hey, we got this trade with the Boston Bruins. He's got a no trade clause, so he has to approve it. We got a trade with the Boston Bruins all lined up and ready to go. We just need you to sign off on it. And he's like, I'm not so sure. Okay, let's talk about it. Talk about it for a few hours. And then he said, yeah, I'm not going anywhere but Pittsburgh. So then Ray Shiro gets a call from Jay Feaster. Now, why Jay Feaster felt the need to make this trade that day, I don't know. But he basically had no leverage. He just had to take whatever the Penguins were nice enough to offer him in exchange for Jerome McGinley, in exchange for the captain of his team, in exchange for the most popular player on the team, and a guy that has spent many, many years with the Calgary Flames. It's pathetic how this went down, and Ray Shiro, I think, should get a lot of heat in Calgary, pardon the pun, with the Flames. But he should get a lot of heat as to how he handled this. You have to get, before you start making a trade and getting approval, getting the framework and telling a team, we are going to make this trade, we are good to go, it's a done deal, you have to get the player's approval. You have to know that he will sign off on it. Now, when you approach Jerome McGinley and you say, give me a list of teams you're willing to be traded to, you need that to be a final list so that you can pit those teams against each other. It can't be, I'll go to this team only, because you're going to get screwed every single time. And that's what happened here. Jay Feaster handled this very poorly, I think. Ray Shiro handled it like a genius. I mean, you get a phone call and says, yeah, we need to trade Jerome McGinley to you tonight, pretty much. What would you give us? I'll give you these two dudes. and you'll be happy to like... I mean, they're fortunate they got a first-round pick, even though with the way the Penguins are going, that's going to be 28th at best in the NHL overall. So, yeah, great. You got a first-round pick and two middling prospects. Let's get some information on the prospects from our Puck Podcast draft analyst, Mike Marenghi, who sent me this information about the two players coming to Calgary. Ben Hankowski was drafted 63rd overall in 2009 by Pittsburgh. He's the most prolific scorer in Minnesota high school history with 405 points. He's currently in his senior year and is the captain at St. Cloud State, where he has 16 goals and 13 assists in 34 games. They're going to be playing Notre Dame in the regionals, by the way, and he can be signed to play with the Flames as soon as his college season ends. Kenneth Agostino was drafted 140th overall in 2010. He's the two-time New Jersey High School Player of the Year. He's currently in his junior year at Yale and is leading them in scoring with 37 points in 33 games, 15 of those goals. He has one more year of NCAA hockey, or he can sign with the Flames after this season. Neither player has signed their entry-level deals. Both play left wings and are both projected fringe prospects. He says neither projects to be more than a third-line player. Hankowski is a two-way winger, and Agostino more of a scorer and a solid player. But both, he says, project to be third-line players. So for Jerome McGinley, now granted, he's a free agent at the end of this season, is McGinley. So the Penguins may only have him for 13 games plus the playoffs. They could have him for as few as 17 games if they are to get swept in the first round, which seems very doubtful, and I'll get to that in a second. But to give up your captain, your most popular player, it's a terrible return for Calgary, and I think Jay Feaster handled this very, very poorly. I'd be fuming if I was a Calgary Flames fan at this point. So very, very poorly handled by Jay Feaster. And Ray Shiro is hung out to dry, Peter Chiarelli is hung out to dry here. He's got to explain himself to a couple of his prospects who he thought he was trading and got scratched and are now back on the back in the organization, never really left, but they're no longer on at trade bait. But you got to explain to them why they were being shopped, tell them, calm their fears that they're going to get moved at any minute, that they're going to afraid to answer their phone, and explain to them again that, no, you're still a big part of our organization. We just, had a chance to get a great player, a once-in-a-lifetime player. We had to take it. So, it's a tough trade for the Boston Bruins, tough pill for them to swallow. But for the Pittsburgh Penguins, come on. You give up, three draft picks? Four draft picks total. Your first, 2 seconds, and a fifth. Plus Joseph Morrow and two other prospects. And you get Brendan Morrow, Douglas Murray, and Jerome Iginla in exchange. You gave up nothing off your active roster in those three trades. Clearly, you already had a great team. Now you've added the captain from two teams, both veterans, and a veteran defenseman. Pittsburgh is the hands-down favorite to win the Cup. And if they don't win the Cup this season, it's an upset in my mind. This is the best team in hockey right now. And they just got better. Jerome Iginla hasn't even played a game for him yet. He has his visa problems have been cleared. He's ready to play in the United States be employed in the United States. And he should be in the lineup tomorrow when they play the New York Islanders. I mean, they are loaded right now. It's embarrassing how loaded that team is. And they have, there's so much pressure on the rest of the Eastern Conference to try and make a move to keep pace with them, because you can't deal with that depth. Let's go through some of the players that they have now. Obviously, Sidney Crosby and Evgeny Malkin are still there. James Neal. Chris Kunitz is having a hell of a season. Pascal Dupuis. Now you've added Brendan Morrow. Now you've added Jerome Iginla. It's insane. It's insane the depth and veteran experience they have and leadership they have on that team. Now, a lot of people say, what about the chemistry? May not be great chemistry. That's a concern. But do you really think Brendan Morrow, Douglas Murray, and Jerome Iginla are going to come in there and cause some waves? You don't think that a guy like Sidney Crosby, who's made Chris Kunitz a great player, can coax some offense out of Jerome Iginla? They played together on Team Canada when they won the gold medal in the 2010 Olympics. I just can't fathom chemistry is going to be what takes this team down. Now, maybe they run into a hot goalie in the playoffs. Maybe that's the case, and that stops them. But that's the only thing that would stop them. That or a lot of injuries, because this team is loaded. They are by far the favorite to win the Cup right now, or at least make it out of the Eastern Conference Final. If they don't make the Cup Finals, it's a disappointment. That's the pressure they've put on themselves. And it's also a lot of pressure for this season, because Iginla's contract is up after this year. Morrow is up after this year. Murray is up after this year. You have given up three prospects. They may not be the greatest ones in the world, but you have given up three prospects, and you have given up some quality draft picks. Your future does not look real bright if those three players walk this summer and you are minus three prospects and minus three draft picks. That could come back to bite them down the road, but they are going all in to win the Cup this season. And if you're a Penguins fan, you got to be absolutely loving it. And I can't believe they still have more cap space to make more moves if they wanted. I think they still have $4 million in cap space. It's crazy. The Penguins have built themselves an all-star team, and it's going to be fun to watch them for these last 13 games that they have left in the regular season. And it's going to be amazing. I really am anxious to see how they do in the playoffs, because I think they are going to roll through the playoffs. I really do. I don't see this team hitting a speed bump until at least the Eastern Conference Final. But we will see. Games to be played, certainly. Now, Pittsburgh, they've added all those players, and oh, by the way, they've won 14 straight games. On Thursday night, they absolutely blitzed the Winnipeg Jets 4-0. The NHL record is 17 straight wins set by the 92-93 Penguins. The last loss that Pittsburgh has was back on February 28th, and they have a chance to go 15-0 in March when they played the Islanders on Saturday. So the Islanders are going to be running into a buzzsaw. That game is, I believe it's in Pittsburgh. Let me double check that. Yes, it is. So it's a home game for the Penguins. Jerome McGinley is going to be there. The place is going to be going bananas. The Islanders had better play the game of their lives just to stay within shouting distance, to not get boat raced in that one. It's going to be Malkin's back. Crosby's obviously playing well. Ginla's in the lineup. It's going to be something special to watch. Luckily, every game of theirs will be played on national TV, so you won't miss a thing if you have NBC Sports Network or the NHL Network here in the United States. But the winning streak that the Penguins are on, you may be a little bit confused. The other one that the one that the Blackhawks had going earlier in the season was not losing in regulation to start a season. This is flat out winning games. They're not losing in regulation. They're not losing in overtime. They're not losing in a shootout. They're not losing, period. They are 14-0 in their last 14 games. They've gotten all 28 points available to them since February 28th. Just to put that in a little bit of perspective, that's more points than the Florida Panthers have this season. That's more points than the Colorado Avalanche have this season. So it's 1 point less than the Philadelphia Flyers have this season. So there's a little feather in their cap for the rivalry. We have as many points. If they win on Saturday against the Islanders, they will have more points in March than the Flyers have all season. That is amazing. That's incredible, as Kathy Lee Crosby would say. What a season and what a streak for the Pittsburgh Penguins. Good time to be a Penguins fan for sure. Now, last week, I talked about the Columbus Blue Jackets playing themselves into the playoff race, and then they went on the road, and before that game, I actually watched their game against the Nashville Predators, and head coach Todd Richards told his team to approach this road trip as though it were the playoffs. He wanted to see them play with that kind of a intensity and that kind of a mentality, that this is the playoffs. Well, they responded by getting absolutely blown out against the Predators. They looked absolutely horrible. Sergei Bobrovsky was pulled in the first period. Terrible, terrible game one, if that was the playoffs. They looked terrible. They responded to that by losing to Vancouver in a shootout in a game that they barely got any offensive chances. I think Corey Schneider, who had the shutout, said the game was 1-0, by the way, and Corey Schneider said, most people may not have even seen me. You know, he didn't even, I think he had 13 saves or something ridiculous like that. It was pathetic offensive effort from the Blue Jackets, but they did get a point out of it, but they lost. So they're 0-1-1 through two games of the playoffs, and then they followed that up by losing to the Oilers. So if this is the playoffs, you're down 3-0, and you can't afford to lose again. And they did rebound back with a win over the Calgary Flames tonight. I'm actually watching the replay of the game right now as I record this on NHL Game Center. So I'm watching that. It's they won the game 6-4. Steve Mason got his first start in a while and actually got the win. So good for Steve Mason. Good for the Blue Jackets to get themselves a win. But the mentality, it just struck me to see Todd Richards put so much emphasis on, let's play this like a playoff series. Let's play these games like playoff games. And then they went out and absolutely got blown out by the Predators in an embarrassing effort. So not the way he wanted them to respond, obviously. And makes you wonder if this team does make the playoffs, what they will have left. I mean, they're fighting so hard just to stay in the race. You got to wonder how much energy and how much mental focus they have left if they do make the playoffs. They'd be energized for sure, but they'd also be playing the Chicago Blackhawks most likely, and that's going to be a tough draw. As for the now, the Blue Jackets have made the playoffs in their history. Of course, they had the infamous sweep at the hands of the Detroit Red Wings the one year they made the playoffs. A team that has not made the playoffs since before the first, well, let's put it this way, the Maple Leafs. They are going to make the playoffs this season. It is going to happen. And this is the first time they will have made the playoffs since The Matrix Reloaded was in theaters. They have 13 games left to play, does Toronto. The Leafs are in sixth place in the Eastern Conference, have a 7-point lead on the ninth place Islanders. It would take an epic collapse at this point for Toronto to miss the playoffs, and it's crazy to think that the roster and coaching staff that Brian Burke assembled is playoff bound, yet he is now working for the Anaheim Ducks as a part-time pro scout. Dave Nonis, you, sir, are a genius. It takes a wise man to do nothing but sit and watch the team play. He has made no moves to improve this team, to make it his own. He simply inherited the team and the coaching staff, let them play, and good things are happening. And if you watched their game against, who was that they played? And was it Ottawa? I got to look that up because it was a hell of a game that they played recently. And Joffrey Leupel went end-to-end and had just a gorgeous goal against Carolina. That's correct. Joffrey Leupel went end-to-end, beat all six Hurricanes on the ice to score a goal that ended up being the game winner. They added a couple of empty netters to make it a 6-3 final. But Toronto, they are going to the playoffs. And as a former, you know, they're my girlfriend team this year. And I picked them because they had so many players and coaches and GMs and everything that I was familiar with. And I feel good for a lot of those guys. I feel good for Randy Carlyle, who I thought got a bum rap in Anaheim. I know a lot of Ducks fans were happy to see him go. I was not one of them. I was one of the very few Ducks fans that was still supporting Randy Carlyle. But what's done is done. He's gone. I'm glad to see that his coaching style, which was derided by many Ducks fans, is not obsolete in today's NHL, can still win, and is he's proving that he still knows how to draw blood from a stone with defensemen. And so I'm happy for him. I'm happy for James Reimer and Ben Scrivens, who have been called horrible things both on this show and in throughout the media. And everybody says Toronto needs a goalie, Toronto needs a goalie, Toronto needs a goalie. And they made fun of Brian Burke for keep saying, I like the goalies we have, we're all right. Well, good for them for being the goalies that are going to get this franchise back to the playoffs. Good for Nazem Kadri, who was almost forgotten as a prospect. He was considered to be a complete bust. He wasn't exactly tearing up the AHL. He is tearing up the NHL. He's having a great season. And good for the Leafs fans. I mean, it's about to get crazy in Toronto, and the atmosphere when they take the ice for their first playoff game is going to be intense. It'll be the first time they will have hosted a playoff game since Clay Aiken was atop the charts. Seriously. 2003, May 2003 was the last time the Toronto Maple Leafs hosted a playoff game. And it's now 2013, if you're not keeping track. It's been a long time. They got a lot of energy. Those tickets are going to be expensive, and they are going to be rocking. And it's going to be a fun atmosphere to watch on TV, and I just wish I was able to be there in person. I hope those of you that are Leafs fans or are in the Toronto or Ontario area are able to get to one of those games somehow, some way, or be part of the mob that is no doubt going to be outside the Air Canada Center there in Toronto, as that place is just going to be up for grabs when the Leafs hit the ice for that first playoff game. And I'm happy to see them doing so well this year. A girlfriend team that has worked out for once. So good for them. This is, by the way, the did you see portion, but I'm just kind of going on teams here and mentioning different teams. But let's say, did you see or have you seen the race that is going on atop the Northwest Division? Now, the Wild had won seven straight before tonight. They lost to the Dallas Stars tonight, but they had won seven straight games. Meanwhile, they're still in second place in their division because the Vancouver Canucks have won six straight games. So as hot as Minnesota's winning seven games and is just keeping pace with Vancouver in the Northwest Division, they're not gaining any ground, and that's got to be extremely frustrating for the Wild, especially with tonight's loss that leaves them, as we look at the standings, 2 points behind the Vancouver Canucks in the division, and they're in a tough spot as far as catching them. Now, obviously, they're going to be able to play the Canucks again later this season, so they'll have a chance head-to-head, but what a race going on in that Northwest Division. A huge drop-off, by the way, from them to the next team in the Northwest. You've got Vancouver and Minnesota way up there at the top, and then you've got the rest of the division in 12th, 14th, and 15th in the conference. So, but then again, when you're Edmonton, Calgary, and Colorado, and you have to play a lot of games against Vancouver and Minnesota, and they are as good as they are and as consistent as they are, you're going to have a tough time winning games. So what a race, though. That's going to be so much fun to watch as a impartial fan, as a guy that doesn't care and doesn't live and breathe with every single win. It's going to be gut-wrenching for a fan of Vancouver and Minnesota to watch each night and scoreboard watch when you're not, when the other team is playing. But as an impartial fan, just watching the games, it's going to be a lot of fun to see these two teams fight it out. And I hope it comes down to the very last day of the season to see which team will be the division champ and get that third seed, which is very important because obviously if you're the three seed, you not only guaranteed home ice advantage, you still would be as the four seed, but you're not winning the division. You're guaranteed to be the home ice. If you don't win the division, you're at the mercy. You could slip back down to fifth, in which case you would have to go on the road against a very good team that is the fourth seed. Whereas if you're the third seed, you get to play the sixth seed. You're guaranteed at home. It's a lot easier. There is some, believe me, both teams are going to be fighting hard for that division title. And with the money Minnesota put out last off season, it would be a validation of their expenditure if they were to win the division the very next season. And it'd be great to see in the state of hockey. But it's going to be a good race from those two teams, and I look forward to watching it down the stretch. Did you see the Kings become the Kings once again? The defending Stanley Cup champs got shut out in back-to-back games 2 weeks ago, and this past week they turned it on and beat the Blackhawks 5-4 in a wild game that is my Grandma Fiddler game of the week. Now, there was a great game in Boston between the Habs and Bruins, but this one was my Grandma Fiddler game of the week. 5-4, Kings beating the Blackhawks in a just fantastic game that I really think the Kings needed. I think it was huge because it prevented a three-game losing streak. It kept them in the race for the Pacific Division and kept them also in the race and on pace to be for the fourth seed in the Western Conference. They want to get that. Again, it's important to be that home ice. I know the Kings were eighth last year and won the Cup, dominated. You can't count on doing that every single year. But I think this win was just huge for them mentally. They played great. They looked like their old selves. They were scoring well. They were exchanging blows with one of the best teams in the Western Conference this year on the road. Just a fantastic game. And I think it gave them their mojo back and some of their confidence and their swagger. They followed it up with a 4-2 win over the Blues. They currently sit in fifth place to the Kings in the Western Conference, 10 points behind the Ducks. So it's a bit of a long shot that they can win the Pacific Division, I would say. It's an extreme long shot, as a matter of fact. But there is a chance, and they're 6 points ahead of ninth place Dallas. So, five points ahead of ninth place Dallas. So you got to like the way that this week went if you're an LA Kings fan. And I think that win was just, you can't say how big it was. And then very next day, they got to go visit with President Obama at the White House and give him their jersey and laugh at corny jokes and ha ha ha, all that good stuff. But it's the final feather in the cap when you win the Stanley Cup as an American team. You get to go visit the White House and meet with the president, and nobody pulled the Tim Thomas and held out for political reasons. They all showed up. They were all very happy to be there, and they all smiled. And in fact, Daryl Sutter said he wanted to talk to him about the Keystone Pipeline. So I'm sure Obama wanted to hear from a foreigner, a Canadian hockey coach that looked like he's in a bitter beer commercial. I'm sure he wanted to hear what he had to say about the Keystone Pipeline. But who knows? Daryl Sutter, I'm sure, made his point. And Obama was nice enough to just say, okay, that's very interesting. Thank you for saying that. I'll take the jersey, and I got a country to run. But anyway, congratulations to the Kings on that honor and for getting a great win against the Chicago Blackhawks, who have been a very tough team to beat this season. Now, before we get to the rest of our first period, I want to check in on a couple of teams that were the hot picks to win the Stanley Cup this season, before the season. That was the New York Rangers and the St. Louis Blues, who I was on record before the season. I'm not a believer in either one of them. I didn't pick them to do very well, and they're not doing very well. In fact, both are in extreme danger of missing the playoffs entirely. Both teams sit almost identically in eighth place in their conferences. The Rangers are 3 points behind seventh place and are actually tied in points with the ninth place New York Islanders. The only reason they are in eighth as opposed to ninth is that they have a game in hand on the Islanders. So they're 16-14-3. They've given up more goals than they've scored. They're barely scoring any goals at all this season. They've only scored 78 on the season. To put that in a little bit of perspective, the New York Islanders have scored 100 goals this season. One team went out and got Rick Nash. One team did not. And they've scored 22 goals more than... Now, granted, the Rangers do have a game in hand, so if they score 22 goals in that game, they'll be on pace. But I'm going to go ahead and say that's not going to happen. If it does, though, I expect to see pants on the ice because somebody's got to have a pants trick in that game. But the Rangers are in eighth place, basically a tie with their crosstown rivals, or not crosstown, but in-state rivals, the New York Islanders, for that final playoff spot. And in the West, the St. Louis Blues have 36 points. They are 17-14-2 on the season. They are 2 points behind seventh-place San Jose and 1 point ahead of Dallas and 1 point ahead of Columbus for the final playoff spot. 2 points ahead of Nashville, 3 points ahead of both Phoenix and Edmonton. So they are very precarious is their perch in the playoffs. And it's not beyond the realm of possibility at all that the St. Louis Blues could miss the playoffs. New York Rangers could as well, which would be shocking. But for the teams that were expected, the consensus picks to meet in the Stanley Cup final, it's a realistic possibility that neither one of them could make the playoffs, and that would be something because both are way too talented to miss the playoffs. You got to think there would be some casualties in each town if that were to happen. As far as coaches, there'd be some somebody would lose their job, I have to think, in each town if these teams are to miss the playoffs. Let's get into the boat races this week, and it's a quick recap. There were none. No boat races this past week in the NHL. So we move on to the stats and standings portion of the show, and let's take a look at the stats. I've kind of talked about it throughout the first period, but let's get a full recap. Let's start in the Western Conference, where the Chicago Blackhawks lead it with 53 points. The Anaheim Ducks are in second with 50 points, and Vancouver is in third with 44 points. Minnesota is the fourth seed right now with 42 points. The fifth seed is the Los Angeles Kings with 40 points. Detroit is the sixth seed with 39 points. San Jose is in 7th with 38 points, and St. Louis is in 8th with 36 points. That final playoff spot, I gave you the standings just a minute ago. Dallas, Columbus, Nashville, Edmonton, Phoenix are 9th through 13th. And then we come back to the Calgary Flames in 14th and the Colorado Avalanche in 15th place in the Western Conference. As for the Eastern Conference, the Pittsburgh Penguins with their 14-game win streak, oddly enough, are leading the conference with 54 points. They lead the entire NHL at this point with 54 points. The Montreal Canadiens are still in second, thanks to that great win over Boston. They are in the second seed with 47 points, and then the Winnipeg Jets leading the Southeast Division with 38 points, which is good for third in the conference standings. The fourth seed is the Boston Bruins with 46 points. Ottawa is in fifth with 44 points. Toronto is in sixth with 42 points. New Jersey is in seventh with 38 points. And the Rangers are in 8th with 35 points. The Islanders are in 9th with 35 points. The Carolina Hurricanes are in 10th with 32. And then there is a three-way tie for 11th between the Capitals, the Lightning, and the Sabres, all with 31 points. All still, again, mathematically possible to make the playoffs, but unrealistic when you consider the teams they have to pass and the number of games left. It's getting very tough to do the math. Philadelphia, 29 points in 14th. And Florida Panthers are in 15th. With just 26 points on the season. As for your league leaders, with about a month to play in the season, Sidney Crosby leads all players with 56 points, followed by Steven Stamkos of the Lightning with 46, and Chris Kunitz of the Penguins with 44. Your goal leader is Steven Stamkos with 25 for the Lightning. John Tavares of the Islanders has 21, and Chris Kunitz has 20 for third place. As for your goaltending leaders, still Craig Anderson. The guy never plays, so his stats never change. 1.49 goals against average and a 9.52 save percentage. Both lead the league. Jonathan Bernier is in second place. The Kings soon-to-be-traded backup goalie. Probably be traded in the offseason, but he's helping the Kings get a little bit more for him with a 1.94 goals against average is second best. And Tuukka Rask and Corey Crawford of the Bruins and Blackhawks, respectively, 2.02 are in third place. Let's talk about the Blackhawks real quick before I get to the save percentage leaders, and that is Ray Emery lost his first game of the season last year. He was 12-0 this season, which was an NHL record to start a season for a goalie. Just unbelievable start to the season for the backup goalie and a guy that couldn't even was happy to get any job just a couple years ago when the Ducks gave him a chance as their backup. He earned his spot. He got him into the playoffs that year, and he's having a fantastic season for Chicago. Took his first loss of the season, and it was a regulation loss as the Ducks swept the season series against the Chicago Blackhawks with a 2-1 win in Chicago. So another great game between those two teams, and Ray Emery took his first loss of the year against his former team. As for your save percentage leaders, Craig Anderson does lead it. Ben Bishop of the Ottawa Senators, his teammate, is in second place with a 9.28. So great goaltending keeping the Senators in it for sure. And in third place is a tie between Corey Schneider of the Vancouver Canucks and Sergei Bobrovsky of the Blue Jackets, both with a 9.26 save percentage. Let's get to the ER report, and we start with the New Jersey Devils, who have lost winger Ilya Kovalchuk for the next 2 to 4 weeks with a shoulder injury, but it will not require surgery, so that's good news. Kovalchuk is just 29 years old. He's second on the team in scoring with 10 goals and 27 points. He lost an edge during the third period of the Devils' 2-1 win against the Panthers on Saturday, plowed into the end boards, and left the ice clutching his shoulder in obvious pain. Philadelphia Flyers on Monday announced that forward Danny Briere is out indefinitely with a concussion. Briere suffered the injury during one of the team's practices during their 5-day break from March 19th to the 23rd. In 26 games this season, the 35-year-old has 5 goals and 8 assists. No rush back for a team that's obviously not going anywhere, so Briere could be out for the season. We will see. It certainly hurts the potential to trade him before the trade deadline. And also, they lost Braden Coburn out indefinitely with a separated shoulder. Their defenseman, so the Flyers down 2 more players, just helping what's already been a great season in Philadelphia, just keeps getting better and better. Montreal Canadiens forward Rene Bourque recently suffered a setback in his recovery from a concussion. RDS reporting that Bourque left last Thursday's skate early because he wasn't feeling well, has not returned to the ice since. He's 31 years old. He suffered his concussion in late February. He had 5 goals and 10 points in 17 games up until that point in the season, so he remains out indefinitely. As for the discharged list, Winnipeg Jets defenseman Toby Enstrom, who missed the last 19 games of the shoulder injury, returned this week through 13 games. He was scoring a point per game with 2 goals and 11 assists. He's a key player on the team's power play and is by far the team's best setup man from the blue line. I saw him play a game. Who did I see the Jets play this week? My goodness, I've seen him play a couple times. But he looked fantastic. And the way he handles the puck and the way he skates is something special. He's a small man, but man, can he scoot out on the ice. He's a lot of fun to watch. And so a big addition to a team that's already having a good season. That's like making a trade at the deadline, basically. They just added a stud defenseman as far as scoring goals and on their power play. Carolina Hurricanes activated forward Chad LaRose off injured reserve. He's 30 years old. He had missed 10 games because of a concussion. He had 2 goals and an assist in 19 games prior to the injury. Also back from injured reserve this week is St. Louis forward TJ Oshie and Nashville Predators forward Patrick Hornquist, both discharged from the ER and back on the ice. That's good to see. Time for the law and order portion of the show, and we only have something to go with on the ice, no off the ice. That's good. But on the ice, we had one incident, and that was LA Kings forward Jordan Nolan getting fined $1,436.94, not a penny more, for a cross-check on Vancouver's Henrik Sedin last Saturday. He did not receive a penalty on the play, but the NHL felt like taking basically a game check or whatever portion it was, you know, $1,400 for a rookie that's not making a lot. It's not a huge amount, but it is a fine, and it goes on his permanent record, so the next time he could get suspended if he has any transgressions in the future. One other move to make a note of, and that was not a trade but a waiver move, the Montreal Canadiens claimed center Jeff Halpern off waivers from the New York Rangers last Saturday. He's a 36-year-old checking forward who is very good on faceoffs. He had 1 assist and was -5 in 30 games for New York this season. This is his second stint in Montreal. He had 11 goals and 15 assists in 72 games after he signed with them in 2010-2011. Some signings to get you caught up to date on, and one shocking one. Let's start in Carolina, and this was not the shocking one But it is stunning, as the Carolina Hurricanes, after just 30 games, decided they'd seen enough of Alexander Semin. Let's go ahead and sign into a 5-year, $35 million contract extension. He's 29 years old. He signed a 1-year, $7 million deal this past offseason. He's in his 8th NHL season, his first with the Hurricanes. He had 8 goals and 22 assists, so he was a point-per-game player, plus 18, looked great, tied for 11th among all NHL skaters in assists, and tied for 10th in plus-minus ratings. But the money and the term was very surprising to me. This seems like a guy that would be better suited for a 1-year contract than a 5-year, $35 million deal. But hey, the Hurricanes, they like what they see. They want to make a commitment. And if I'm Alexander Semin, I don't care if it's Russia, Sweden, Zimbabwe, or what. You're offering me $35 million for 5 years. I'm signing a contract with you. And he's obviously having good success with Carolina. So both sides are happy. I just wonder if both sides will be happy in a couple of years. I know Semin will, because he's still going to be getting paid $7 million a year. I don't know that the Hurricanes will be as happy. The Tampa Bay Lightning agreed to terms with center Nate Thompson on a 4-year contract extension worth $6.4 million total, not per year. Thompson would have been an unrestricted free agent this summer. He's 28 years old. He's a checking line center with 6 goals and 10 points in 30 games so far this year. Anaheim Ducks signed unrestricted free agent Radek Dvorak to a contract that will expire at the end of the season, so a 1-year deal, basically 20 games that they signed him to at most. 36-year-old veteran will earn $675,000. He cleared waivers before he joined the Ducks. He had to clear waivers because he played games in Europe after the lockout ended. He was drafted by the Florida Panthers in the first round of the 95 draft, and spent this season playing for Davos in the Swiss League, where he registered 7 points in 7 games. Last season, he had 4 goals and 17 assists with the Dallas Stars. Sheldon Surrey said he was happy to have his old teammate join him, and we'll see what he does with the Ducks for the remainder of this season. New York Rangers and forwards Matt Zuccarello, the Norwegian Wizard, has agreed to terms on a contract contingent of his release from his current team, which is Magnitogorsk Metallurg of the KHL. 5'7" winger who played for the Rangers in 2010 through 2012 has an NHL out clause in his current contract with Metallurg that will allow him to return to New York once the paperwork is completed. Zuccarello, nicknamed the Norwegian Hobbit Wizard, I should say, forgot the Hobbit part because he's so short, had 11 goals and 17 assists in 44 games with his Russian club this season. And perhaps the biggest shocker of the week, as far as a signing, was when the New York Islanders signed a contract extension with Lubomir Visnovsky, the man that fought the NHL to not be traded to the Islanders and then refused to show up at the beginning of the season for the New York Islanders. He made it very clear through his actions that he did not want to play for the New York Islanders. And yet, apparently that's not true, because he just signed a 2-year, $9.5 million contract extension to stay with the Islanders. He's having a good season with them. He's been a great addition to them so far. The Islanders are in the playoff race. They like what they see out of him. 2-year, $9.5 million for Visnovsky to stay with the Islanders. I couldn't believe it when I heard it, but there you have it. One other signing, and that was the Red Wings. They signed defenseman Dan DeKeyser, a 23-year-old former college defenseman who was the sought-after player this season. He hadn't been drafted, so he was a free agent. It wasn't quite the Justin Schultz sweepstakes of a year ago, but he was very highly sought after. He had his choice of teams. He chose Detroit, and if I understand the rules correctly, he can begin playing for them immediately. He does not need to sit out this season. He is a free agent, and he can start playing for them right away. So good for them. And one final note on the first period, and that was that longtime NHL assistant coach Wayne Fleming died this past week at the age of 62. He was in Calgary and died after a battle with brain cancer. He spent 14 seasons in the NHL as an assistant coach with the Islanders, the Coyotes, the Flyers, the Flames, the Oilers, and the Lightning. He also coached internationally, including stints as head coach of Leksand in Sweden, Evi Landshut in Germany, and Avangard Omsk in Russia. He was part of 3 Olympic coaching staffs for Canada, winning a silver medal in Albertville in 92 and a gold medal in 2002. He's a native of Winnipeg, Manitoba. He also spent 9 years as head coach of the University of Manitoba. So our condolences to the friends and family of Wayne Fleming, longtime NHL assistant coach who passed away this past week.
H2O Overdrive Hydrate is a great-tasting hydration drink. Pros like Pavel Datsyuk, George Peros, Bryce Salvador, and Devin Zetaguchi trust it to stay hydrated so they can play their best. No sugar, maximum hydration. Use the coupon code HOCKEY to receive 50% off a six-pack sampler from H2OOverdrive.com during March.
Time for the second period here on the Puck Podcast, and I'm pleased to have the interview this week with NHL.com's Kings and Ducks correspondent Curtis Zupke. I caught up with him. This interview was on Monday when we were at the Ducks game against San Jose. So it's a little bit dated information, especially when we get to talking about Iginla, but still some good information. And let's hear what Curtis Zupke of NHL.com has to say about the Western Conference. Here at the first intermission between the Sharks and Ducks on Monday at the Pond, and I'm here with Curtis Zupke, Ducks and Kings correspondent for NHL.com. You can follow him on Twitter at Curtis with a C, Zupke, Z-U-P-K-E. One of the best reporters out here in Southern California, former Orange County Register reporter, my hometown paper when I was growing up. So, first of all, earlier today the Sharks made a trade sending Douglas Murray to the Pittsburgh Penguins. Is this the first of many for the Sharks? Do you think they're kind of conceding a little bit on this season, or is this just a move they would have made regardless of the standings?
You know, I think you might look at it at more as the latter. I mean, Murray was on an expiring contract, and you know, from what I understand, he was kind of on a downward trend in his career here. It's more a great move for the Penguins, I think, to pick up a guy like that, maybe give him a change of scenery. You know, obviously they're in a position to do something big this year. You know, the Sharks, this next week is going to be really interesting for them because they obviously need to make up some ground here. And I don't know what other moves they might pull out. I think they might kind of see what happens in this next week here to see if they're going to keep trying to get out of this hole and maybe, you know, if not, make a big move. But yeah, it's hard to tell with them right now.
If they do miss the playoffs, and it's a very real possibility for them this year, they're on the outside looking in as we look right now. Do you think this is a team that'll make big changes in the offseason, behind the bench, on the roster, in the front office even, or do you think they try and continue to extend their window of competing?
You know, that's a good question. You know, somebody was asking me about McClellan the other day, and obviously Doug Wilson has loyalty to him, but I think if you look at, you know, the window that he's been given these past however many years it's been now, I you know, if they don't make the playoffs, I think you got to take a look at changing up something. You know, which is too bad because I do think he's a good coach. I do think he really knows what he's doing. But you know, it's only natural for an organization to do that. I mean, look at the Kings. They got rid of Murray, who they thought was going to be the person that's going to bring them back, and brought in a new guy and ended up getting them a Stanley Cup. So I mean, I would really have some doubts about McClellan if they don't make the playoffs.
We've seen two teams in the East make coaching changes so far this season. No teams in the West. Do you think, is there a team in the West that is considering it maybe before this playoff push with 1 month to go in the season?
You know, I was talking about this with another writer the other day. I don't know. I think this shortened season has kind of made teams have the attitude of, you know, they, not that they're going to write this season off, but I think the shortened season might make them less inclined to do that. You know, if this were a full season, yeah, you make a change, but I would tend to think teams might be a little gun-shy on that.
The Calgary Flames have been a team that's been very intriguing all season long, and you have to wonder what they're going to do between now and April 3rd, the trade deadline. Do you see this team? Are they finally going to admit that they are entering a rebuild, or are they going to keep fooling themselves that they just need a tweak or two to be a competitor?
You know, that's a good question. I've not been able to really figure them out these past two or three years now. I think what you have to look out for first is what's going to happen with Iginla. Are they going to move him or not? That's going to be the first domino to fall with them. You know, the way things go up there, they might just kind of stick it out and say, you know, this team is kind of on the bubble. They can, you know, they're not that far away from being a playoff team. That's kind of the way I might see that going.
Another team in Western Canada and in Alberta, actually, is Edmonton. Once again, in entering the lottery draft for the draft lottery, I should say. When is this team going to turn it around and become a playoff team, or are they just in constantly spinning their tires, and by the time they get close, guys are going to be expiring their contracts, and they're going to have to start getting rid of some of their young talent.
Well, I think they're about a year away. I mean, you look at all those young guys there. They've done some really nice things this year. I think earlier in the year, people were looking at them as maybe a playoff team just because of all that talent there. But I think they're about a year away. I think they'll be a playoff team next year. You know, the one thing, you're right, they're going to have to deal with all those contracts long-term down the road. But I think they're about a year away from being in the playoffs.
And last team for Western Canada is, of course, Vancouver. Another intriguing team. Minnesota seems to be making a good fight for that division. If they don't win the division, do they make big changes? Because they have huge expectations. And when does the domino fall for Roberto Luongo, or do they give him another shot at winning this starting job?
You know, that's a good question. I think what they're doing this season is kind of the right thing, is switching off with him and Schneider. You know, I saw Vancouver the other night, and I've seen them about two or three times this year. I think their defense is pretty solid. I think, you know, with the skill they have up front, I think their defense is pretty solid to make another run at this thing. As far as what they might do, you know, gosh, I know that it's hard to tell because they got so many guys banged up right now, and Kessler and Booth, it's really hard to tell what they are right now. But they have all these injuries, and they're still third in the West right now. So I don't think they're going to make... This is just a guess. I don't know if they're going to make any drastic changes in the next, coming up to the deadline here.
What about the LA Kings, a team that you're familiar with here in Southern California, defending cup champs, of course? Do you see them making a move before the deadline? They're probably not going to win the division unless they go on a hell of a tear here and the Ducks fall apart. So, but they're used from playing on a lower seed. But do you see them making a move and trying to change the dynamic in the locker room before the deadline?
Well, I think Lombardi is going to do what he did last year. He's going to see what happens in this next week here up before the deadline. He's a deadline guy. You know, last year he got Carter at the deadline. The year before that, he got Penner at the deadline. You know, and there was this Iginla thing hanging out there. And you look at the Kings, and what they do have is they have 9 draft picks in this upcoming draft here. And those are bargaining chips that you can use to make a trade. So I think Dean's going to take a look and see where this team is going with these few games they've got going into the deadline here, because he's a guy who will not sit still. And if they are struggling, I do think he will make some kind of a move.
Do you think Bernier is on the block, or is that a move that might be made over the summer?
I think, you know, it's going to be difficult with him because you have to get another goaltender back in return. The Kings don't have anybody in their system that's ready to step in as a backup. So whatever move you do make, you got to get another backup to come in here. So, you know, I would kind of be surprised if they were able to make that kind of a move. They're in a tough spot with him because, you know, they need to showcase him for these other teams. But they need to get something. If they're going to move, and they need to get something else in return to replace somebody that can back out quick. So, you know, if my intuition tells me, I would be surprised if they're able to move him.
And let's end pretty much where we started about Dallas. They traded Brendan Morrow, their captain. Was that a concession that they're giving up on this season, or was it the same like Douglas Murray, a guy that was a fading player coming toward the end of his contract, and they just made that move regardless of the standings?
Yeah, I think it was kind of similar to Murray. You know, I don't think Morrow is quite the player he used to be. I think what's surprising about that is the fact that they traded their captain. You don't really see that too often these days. And again, I think that's just a pretty good move for Pittsburgh. You know, they bring in a veteran guy who can help them for the stretch run here. Dallas has been pretty hard for me to figure out these past 2 or 3 years. They're kind of on the bubble. They're kind of not. They came through here and beat the Kings. So it's kind of hard to tell what's going on over there. So I think that's kind of a more of a good move for Pittsburgh.
Curtis Zupke, the Kings and Ducks reporter correspondent for NHL.com. Follow him on Twitter at Curtis with the C, Zupke, Zupke. Thank you very much, Curtis, for taking the time to join us.
Thanks a lot.
For high-quality, professional-style hockey jerseys, your best choice is Tally Hockey Jerseys. At Tally Hockey Jerseys, we only use the highest quality twill letters and numbers when customizing jerseys for teams. We take special pride in creating cool and unique crests for teams from all over the world. Tally Hockey Jerseys offers 14 jersey designs that combine classic design details with today's performance fabrics. All Tally Hockey Jerseys have throwback design details, just like the best and most expensive throwback jerseys, minus the high price. All 14 styles of Tally Hockey jerseys are only $49 per jersey. That includes a jersey with your team's custom crest, as well as your name and number in double layer or single layer twill, depending on your jersey style. If you're interested in ordering 12 or more jerseys for your team but don't have a team crest design, no problem. Tally Hockey Jerseys will design one for you for free. If you need jerseys for a team and want a cool crest but don't want to order 12 jerseys, ask about our stock crest. For more information or to place an order, contact Dave at tallyhockeyjerseys.com. And don't forget to check out our Facebook page to see hundreds of pictures of custom crests we've created for other teams. That's Tally Hockey Jerseys, T-A-L-L-Y, Hockey Jerseys.
Time for the third and final period here on the Puck Podcast, and we want to remind you that if you're listening to the show in time, you can still enter and have a chance to win an autographed George Parros jersey courtesy of H2O Overdrive. Simply post a photo of yourself with a mustache, real or fake, to Instagram with the hashtag HydrateYourStash, STACHE. And good luck. I hope it is a member of the Puck Podcast community that wins that George Parros autographed jersey. That would be very cool. And we thank H2O Overdrive very much for their sponsorship of the Puck Podcast, and hope that you folks have checked out their product, and if so, that you like it. And we encourage you to give them some feedback and tell them how much you appreciate them sponsoring our show and helping us bring it to you each and every week. Let's get to the fan correspondent portion of the show, and we start with the Pittsburgh Penguins, where we left off in the first period, I think. And this is Mish Shanmugam. He says, as one of the Penguins fans correspondents, I feel obligated to provide a report after this past week. The report is, oh my God, we're going to win the cup. We're going to win the cup. We're amazing. Ray Shiro is God. We've won 14 in a row, and we're adding a Ginla. That is all. But really, the Penguins have allowed 9 goals in their past 10 games with 3 shutouts during that time, and that is the reason to be scared of this team right now, says Mish Shanmugam. Our next fan correspondent is in Boston, and that is Mike Paquette. So we go from the team that got a Ginla to the team that thought they were going to get a Ginla, and that is the Boston Bruins. He says, it's been an up-and-down week for the Bruins fans, both on and off the ice, going 1-1-0-1. I'm not sure how that's... He went back to the old style. I have to think that, well, I guess a shootout loss. So 1-1-1, but that last one was a shootout loss. He says, the week started with a 3-2 regulation loss on Saturday in Toronto. Following that game, Claude Julien juggled the lines by dropping Milan Lucic down to the third and moved Brad Marchand up to the top line. He also promoted Dan Pailler to the second line. It worked moderately well on Monday as the Bruins bounced back at home with a 3-2 shootout win over Toronto after falling behind 2-0. Wednesday was a true up-and-down day for the Bruins fans and their fans on the ice. The hated Montreal Canadiens were in town in what was my Grandma Fiddler game of the week. If it wasn't yours, then you should end the show because it was by far the best game of the week with the most action. It wasn't mine. It was the Kings Blackhawks, which I thought was also a fantastic game. But believe me, you can't go wrong. It's like saying, do you want $100 or do you want $250s? You're either way, you're going to be very happy. He says, both teams led blue 2-goal leads as we went from 2-0 Montreal to 4-2 Boston. The teams then traded goals until Andrei Markov tied the game at 5 with 8.7 seconds left in regulation, and Brandon Gallagher scored the winner in the shootout. To me, the big stories from this game, from a Bruins perspective, were Boston's offense waking up while their defense fell asleep. The continued dominance by the Bergeron line last game versus Montreal, Bergeron, Marchand, and Seguin combined for 8 points. This game, they combined for 9 points. And Peter Budaj going 2-0 against the Bruins while saving Carey Price from his 6th straight loss to the Boston Bruins. Now, I'm sure you've gone over the off-ice events in great detail, so I won't go into that here. I will say, from my perspective, I was excited at the idea of a Ginla donning the spoked B, but my personal opinion of him has changed drastically. Why submit a list of 4 teams if you really only wanted to play for Pittsburgh? Neil Smith, former Rangers general manager, stated on Sportsnet Hockey Central that once the list of teams was submitted, he would have only given him the offer that turned out the best for the team. If he said, I only want to go to Pittsburgh, then he would be staying in Calgary. By choosing Pittsburgh, Ginla has hurt the Flames more than he helped them. The Boston offer included a first-rounder, not conditional, and 2 of the organization's top 7 prospects, per the Hockey News, whereas what the Flames got was a first-rounder and 2 prospects that weren't even in the organization's top 15, one of which can become a UFA this summer. I realize my reaction may be due to sour grapes, but I will take great personal joy when the Penguins get bounced from the playoffs. Back to being level-headed, there has been some speculation in the Boston media, based on recent events, Morrow and again the deals, that the choice of Pittsburgh over Boston is linked to the recent lockout, which saw Bruins owner Jeremy Jacobs as a huge villain in the eyes of the Players Association, and Penguins owner as one of the heroes in the eyes of the Players Association. So the players are spurning Boston due to their disdain for Jacobs. Is this true? I have no idea, but it wouldn't really surprise me. After losing out on Morrow and Aginla, the names that are being rumored to targets for Peter Chiarelli are Martin St. Louis, Chris Stewart, Ryan Clough, Jaromir Jagr, Mark Streit, Jay Bomeister, Keith Yandel, Ryan Whitney, and Alish Hemsky. A quick look at Providence with their 3-2 win in Portland on Wednesday. The Baby Bruins became the first AHL team to reach 40 wins on the season, and their magic number is down to 5 to clinch a playoff berth. Sorry for the small novel, but I had a lot to get off my chest. Mike in Ottawa, a Bruins fan correspondent. We thank him for his report. Our last fan correspondent comes from Tampa, Florida, where Nancy Pacini chimes in. She says, well, it's certainly been an interesting week in Lightning Land. I'll just quote you what I posted on a friend's Facebook wall regarding the firing of Guy Boucher. Couple of thoughts I've had for a little while. I'm not really surprised this happened. Although I have the greatest respect for Boucher as both a coach and a man, this just wasn't working. I have to wonder what the problem is when good hockey players such as St. Louis and Purcell suddenly seem to forget how to play and become passing and turnover machines. That tells me there is something wrong in the system. I also see players who are so afraid of making a mistake they end up making quick, bad decisions with the puck. I'm also seeing a trend of the rookies starting out hot and cooling off quickly after a period of time in the NHL, such as Connacher and Kilorn. Although this is to be expected to a certain extent, as the league figures them out, it's been a pretty dramatic fall-off, in my opinion. Also, I can't understand the importance and presence of Le Cavalier. Since he has been out, the team seems to have no leadership amongst the players. All of these things added up, in my opinion, to the inevitable conclusion that we got on Sunday. Since then, the Lightning have named Syracuse AHL affiliate coach John Cooper as the head coach. Assistant Martin Raymond, who was Boucher's guy, was sent to Syracuse to assist the new coach Rob Zettler, who was an assistant under Cooper, and Dan Lacroix and Steve Thomas have been retained as assistants in Tampa and have run the bench the last two games since Boucher was fired. Cooper made his debut on Friday and at home against New Jersey, as we said. Now, as I'm writing this, the Lightning have just beaten the Sabres in one of their best-off efforts recently. Most notable was the effort on the part of some of the veterans. There's been a lot of talk swirling recently that this season's effort was a tank job once they tuned out Boucher. Who knows what really goes on in a pro locker room, but the timing of Boucher's firing tells me that this situation was quickly becoming toxic. Although it's pretty much a given that the playoffs are out of reach, I think a lot will be told by the continued effort put forth by the players over the next month. It will become obvious who does and does not want to be part of the organization going forward. Interesting times, for sure. One other point I wanted to make about the dismissal of Guy Boucher. He was never exactly given a great goalie to work with. He had Dwayne Roloson. Of course, they got rid of Mike Smith, who ended up being a very good goalie, or at least great goalie. I think I'll have some thoughts on Mike Smith in a second, but they never really gave him a great goalie. Dwayne Roloson was over his head that first year and got him to the Eastern Conference Final. He then turned back into a pumpkin the next year and was awful. So they needed to go out and get somebody. They went and got Anders Lindback, and he has not been great. The defense is also not great in front of Anders Lindback, to his credit. So tough situation there. As for Mike Smith, I think Ilya Brizgalov proves this as well. The Phoenix Coyotes' system and defensive talent make goalies look great. Ilya Brizgalov looked fantastic in Phoenix. He looks horrible in Philadelphia. Mike Smith looked horrible in Tampa Bay. He looks fantastic in Phoenix. I think it's simply a product of you stick any competent NHL goalie behind that defense and that system, and they're going to look pretty good. Now, certainly Mike Smith and Ilya Brizgalov played well, but I think they benefited from the defensive system, the coaching of Dave Tippett, and the system and style of play that he has employed there in Phoenix and the way that they've executed it on the blue line. So, just my opinion. Let's go to the email portion of the show, and we start with an email from David in Elkhorn, Wisconsin. Beautiful part of the world. He says, Eddie and Doug, on last week's show, you guys were talking about expansion and realignment. I wanted to hear what your thoughts were about Milwaukee having an NHL franchise. Milwaukee already has a minor league club, the Admirals, which would fit into the new Western Conference, and it would set up natural rivalries with Chicago, Minnesota, and Detroit. The football and baseball fans in Wisconsin already hate teams from those states. With the University of Wisconsin Badgers, there's already a culture of hockey here, and Milwaukee has an arena that is hockey-ready. Looking forward to hearing what you have to say. Until this dream comes true, I'll continue to root for the Blackhawks, with the Lightning being my longtime girlfriend team. I have a serious crush on Martin St. Louis and keep listening to you guys. Keep up the great work. David in Elkhorn, Wisconsin. David, I think Milwaukee is a very viable option. They've got an NBA team. They've got a Major League Baseball team. The Packers are not in Milwaukee, but they're in Wisconsin. And as you said, with the Milwaukee Admirals and the University of Wisconsin Badgers, there's a strong hockey tradition and fan base that they could tap into right away. It's a winter type atmosphere. It's not a hot climate. You're not entering and you're not having to relaunch the sport there. Kids already play hockey in Wisconsin. And I think that's a great idea. I think that would also fit into the Western Conference very nicely. Now, I don't know if the NHL is thinking that way, but I think that's an absolutely a great option for the NHL. I think add them to Kansas City, Seattle, and Quebec as viable options for NHL franchises if teams are to relocate or expand. Our next email comes from Dustin in Detroit. And he says, I'm sure you guys will already discuss this, but I'm curious of your opinions on these kinds of trades. Unless I'm missing something, Dallas is not exactly out of a playoff spot right now, so what gives? If Brendan Morrow is just wanting to go to a better team, does it show a lack of loyalty when a guy near the end of his career is allowed to be traded to a team that has a chance to win? It rarely works out the way it did with Ray Bourque, and he was a quality guy who probably didn't have many haters. And if Dallas is selling, why not trade Yager, Whitney, or other older rental players approaching free agency? Brendan Shanahan went to Detroit right before they won the Cup, but it was not near the end of his career, and I doubt he had a no-trade clause in Hartford. Of course, Mike Modano also went to Detroit, but as a free agent, basically went back home to play in Michigan, after Dallas chose not to re-sign him. I'm hoping Aginla and Alfredson stay where they are. Clearly, one of those guys has a better chance to win this year, but sometimes I like when loyalty beats out the need to win. Well, obviously, Aginla's already moved. I don't think Alfredson's going anywhere, but you mentioned Morrow, and we talked about it in the first period. It was very confusing, and Curtis Zupke and I talked about it in the second period. Very confusing. What's going on in Dallas? What are you thinking? Was it that important to get Joe Morrow and a draft pick? I mean, that you trade your captain? I just don't get it. Very confusing trade by Joe Nieuwendyk, but one that he obviously thought was too good to pass up in the middle of a playoff race, and we'll see what other moves he makes before the trade deadline on April 3rd at 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific. I want to thank my fan correspondents and those of you that took the time to email. If you would like to join the fan correspondents, correspondence@puckpodcast.com is the email address. Don't forget the Hockey Minute Monday through Friday when Eddie is available. We'll be back on iTunes and Eddie's page over at puckpodcast.com. So check us out over there to see when that is going to get posted. The Duck Podcast, whenever I have time to post it, will be up on iTunes and puckpodcast.com as well. And, of course, the Puck Podcast LA Kings edition, when Eddie has time to post it, will be on puckpodcast.com and iTunes as well. Again, go to our website for updates on when that posts, or follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/puckpodcast, or on Twitter, twitter.com/puckpodcast. For more information, or over on Google Plus as well. We're over there as well. And we hope to have a hangout coming up at the trade deadline. So look for that on Wednesday. Not sure if that will happen or not, but we're hoping to. So look for that and more information at the website, puckpodcast.com, Facebook, Twitter, all that stuff. And as always, we encourage your opinions and feedback on the show or anything going on in the world of hockey by sending us an email, feedback@puckpodcast.com. Of course, if you want to send Eddie an email directly, it's eddie@puckpodcast.com, and my email address is doug@puckpodcast.com. My thanks again to Curtis Zupke of NHL.com for being this week's guest, and our thanks again to H2O Overdrive for supporting us during the month of March. For Eddie Garcia, I'm Doug Stolhand. We will talk to you next week on the Puck Podcast.
All opinions expressed on the Puck Podcast are those of the hosts and do not necessarily represent the views of FoxSports.com, 20th Century Fox, or any of its affiliates.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.